Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast on Leverage the Chat. We're doing a special crossover episode with our good friend Anthony Irwin from Locked On Lakers. This is part two of the podcast, so if you want to hear the first part, you're going to need to go over to that feed. We're doing a little bit of cross promotion, so as we always say with our own, rate, review, subscribe. Do the same thing for Anthony's. Make sure you're checking that out. Anthony, how's it going, buddy?
You know, it's a little bittersweet. And we touched on this right at the tail end of the show, but I'm really enjoying watching Clarkson and Nance kind of show everybody that they're actually pretty good at basketball, except it might wind up shooting the Lakers in the foot. So that's
And I guess I might as well introduce Carter. Carter, what's up?
Justin, we've got like the pod hungry masses had better be pleased because we are churning them out right now. This will be 4 in like 8 days.
We're trying to capitalize on the happiness before like this break of like 9 days with the All-Star break. We're like the Cavs. Capitalize on the great moments because you know that there's a nosedive at some point coming in the future.
We don't have the structure to succeed long term.
We're like Andy Lou in A Weekend in Vegas. It's a short-term thing.
It's a short high and a long hangover.
It's funny. You guys are talking about churning out shows. We do daily shows. And
yeah, you guys are insane.
Oh, God, that's a nightmare.
It can be.
You're a machine.
My throat has been sore for roughly 3 months. It hasn't been great. But it was funny. We still had somebody on one of our reviews say that they want more shows. And at that point, I'm just like, all right, dude, come on.
Now you just need to check out other podcasts, because if there's one thing there isn't a shortage of in this world, it's that's podcasts. Sure.
It's a crowded-ass pod market.
Yeah. You can't sit there and say, oh, God, what is there to listen to? But we might as well get this show rolling. We talked a little bit about the Cavs-Lakers trade on part one of this, and now we're kind of going into the more long-term view because, of course, the Lakers have been mentioned often as a landing spot for LeBron James. Anthony, how much of Lakers fandom is buying into this? I know that the jersey Photoshop market is doing well. Is this something that's viewed as a realistic possibility, or is it as Ramona Shelburne had reported about a week ago in that the Lakers are kind of focusing more on 2019?
I think that Ramona report, so Ramona is very close with Jeannie Buss, and she's done a great job of reporting. And I think the Lakers have kind of learned from the previous regime in that previous regime put that deadline down where they said that they were going to turn around the franchise in whatever it was, 3 or 5 years, whatever it was. And that wound up making the rope that they hung themselves on. And I think what the Lakers are starting to do, and they learned that mistake, and they're recalibrating, like the term that was used was that they're recalibrating their cap space and they're going to kick the cap space down the road for the following summer. But what they were really doing was recalibrating expectations of the fan base. And so it's good on them for learning that. But there are always the Laker fan base is, you know, it thrives off of Lakers exceptionalism, and for the good and for bad. The good means that we have enjoyed enough success that you can kind of hold your head a little bit higher. But the bad is that you think that you can cut corners and think that, you know, LeBron's just going to show up one day. And that's just not how these things work. And so
No, I would know nothing about that.
And so to answer the actual question, I think there are always going to be delusional Laker fans, but for the majority of the people who I talk to, they're fairly realistic. They know that at best it's a 50-50 proclamation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting in the sense that, like, I think the difference between, if you're looking at the differences between what this Lakers regime seems to be wanting to do, and what the ones in the past that have failed, it kind of feels like they're just making themselves an option, as opposed to everything will burn to the ground if we don't get someone.
Well, I guess that's true, and it has a lot to do with the pieces that the previous regime put together around these. Like, Mitch had, like, nothing to work with. When Dwight left, they had one first-round pick, and they have, you know, they got lucky enough to draft their buy Jordan Clarkson, who you guys are now familiar with. They purchased him from the Washington Wizards. He was drafted 46th overall. That was a nice find late in the draft. Unfortunately, Julius Randle broke his leg 14 minutes into his Lakers career. But what that did lead to was helping the Lakers land D'Angelo Russell, who, you know, unfortunately was used to move Timofey Mozgov. But in that, they also, that Mozgov trade helped lead to some combination of Josh Hart, who's played pretty well, and Kyle Kuzma, who has really shown some, especially offensive ability. So they have pieces, and those pieces have helped kind of provide a parachute. But yeah, before, when LaMarcus Aldridge and Greg Monroe and Carmelo Anthony and LeBron passed them the first time around, they were just kind of stuck there saying, well, I guess Corey Brewer, come on down. You know, it just, it wasn't going to end well.
It's interesting in the sense that, like, maybe a franchise just isn't supposed to so easily recover from the Dwight thing. Like, the Dwight thing was such a disaster. Yeah. And, like, it is kind of funny that, like, maybe it's, like, reverse Lakers exceptionalism that we expected them to figure it out so quickly after that. But, like, the Dwight thing went so bad. It ended so ugly. And, like, they sacrificed a lot to try to make that work. And, I mean, maybe the end of the run was coming anyway, since Andrew Bynum hates basketball and is a insane person, but I don't know. Like, maybe it was just meant to have a down run, but I do like some of the young guys they have. It's just a matter of, like, when you're up that high in the draft, you have to hit or you stay in limbo. And like, it feels like they're hitting at a higher rate, but you know, we still have a lot more to learn about these rookies.
Yeah, the Lakers are really well suited to become a contender because they seem to do better with these late picks than they do with the high ones. Like, it's crazy the talent that they're getting. You guys should really be getting ready for the free agency of Kyrie in 2019 because I think
Boston
that's
falling apart.
Yeah, that Boston's falling apart. They weren't even a team that was on Kyrie's list of destinations he wanted to go to. I mean, I think there's potential there. Just stay away from LeBron, please.
I've heard that Kyrie. I would like the idea of the Lakers chasing all the people that LeBron now hates.
Well, that was actually one of the selling points I thought that the Lakers could offer LeBron was that they can bring Isaiah Thomas to the meeting and they can tell LeBron that he has the opportunity to tell Isaiah Thomas that his career is over. Like that.
And I thought you were going to say IT is going to try to pitch to LeBron like Kobe did with Dwight and say, you need me. You need me to teach you how to win.
No, it was all from the standpoint of LeBron gets to tell Isaiah Thomas he is now a Sacramento King.
Because I would really love an IT and LeVar Ball pitch to LeBron in that meeting.
Anthony, I have a question about the IT thing because I do think it's so freaking interesting that they have designs on LeBron James, yet acquired someone LeBron James clearly hates and hated playing with. And it's like, it is weird that he's on their team now because it's hard to figure out what the upside of this whole situation is. Because if he plays well enough to earn a contract, you probably don't want to sign him because he might scare away LeBron. And if he sucks, then I guess he just sucks. Like, it almost makes me wonder if they should have just, like, bought him out just to save themselves the trouble.
Well, it was
and
kind
to save
of,
themselves the inevitable fight with LeVar.
It was kind of funny when his agent sent the all caps message to Rachel Nichols, right? I actually got kind of excited. I said, oh, sweet, wave him. Get him out of here. We don't need him. we're fine without him. But look, I think the thing with Isaiah Thomas is he has to have had some humble pie because it wasn't like he
You would think so.
You would hope so. You would really hope so. But this is
well,
now.
Boys, he's not eating it. it is still cooling on in the window.
Yeah, it's been cooling on the windowsill. The birds have gone into it. A couple mice have come by. They've taken a dump in that humble pie. He ain't eating it.
Yeah, they should have made it a lower windowsill. In hindsight, they needed to help him reach it.
Get him a step ladder.
But no, I mean, he has to recognize the writing on the wall here, and to somewhat his credit, he has come out and said that, all right, if I'm going to start, I'm going to earn that starting spot. His agent has walked back some of the stupid stuff that they were saying initially, and look, he is obviously the difference between the Cavs being good. Or being not good and potentially being a freaking disaster. And now I think they are once again the favorites to come out of the East. And he has to look at those two differences. He has to look at how much better at least initially Boston got by basically swapping him out with Kyrie Irving, right? And then on top of that, he's going to be a free agent this year. And he's going to try to stare down Magic freaking Johnson in Los Angeles. He's going to somehow try to use
that's a great point.
any leverage whatsoever and try to force his own desire, the role that he desires in a situation that they really don't need him at all. And might be
is he going to stare down Magic Johnson from like the top of a staircase? How's that going to work?
He's going to stare down Magic Johnson, the top of his shoe. He's going to stare down Magic's face in the reflection from the top of his shoe. There is no way for Isaiah to win any kind of battle of the wits or battle of the wills here. He has to accept a role, or not only will he not be in LA, a place that he really wants to be, but you could make the argument point guards his size don't do very well on the other side of 30. What team is going to go out of their way to go after a locker room cancer who has declined as quickly as he has? He might be
coming home. He's going to the Kings, baby. You just described the goddamn Sacramento Kings.
No, he'll be in the Guangdong Kings. Like he won't. I don't know if he'll be. With
I think they're the Tigers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Those guys. Tigers. Yeah. But I don't.
It's a big cat. It's a predatory cat.
Yeah. So.
There's just not that much use for him in the league it kind of goes back to what I said on our last pod, which is like, if he's not a hyper efficient scorer, he's completely worthless. I mean, just completely worthless. And it's not fair. It's not like nice. I'm not saying it to be mean. It's just like when you have that set of limitations and you can't do anything but score, it's like, you know, that's just how that works. You know, it's like, Tristan Thompson, for example, when he was playing hurt most of the year and he stopped getting offensive rebounds and stopped being able to switch on guys, it's like, well, what the hell do you do if you don't do those two things? Like, same thing with Isaiah. If he's not getting to the paint and scoring and he's not hitting threes and scoring at a high volume, it's like your shortcomings are so devastating that your strengths have to be overwhelming. So if those strengths become just like, you know, like a 6 out of 10, then what are we doing here?
Unfortunately for him, the league got smarter at a time. Like there'd be one thing when, you know, maybe 10 years or so, maybe even 5 years or so ago, where some team out there would want the novelty of this guy, you know, trying to go up against legitimate NBA size night in, night out. But there just isn't that desire for that anymore. That there are very few GMs who will sign somebody just for novelty or just for narrative. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
you're right. There's a lot of guys I think that thought they were going to get paid based on that narrative, and they haven't. It really is becoming more and more of a production league, sans Evan Turner.
And even then, like a productive player like Kyle Lowry, the market just wasn't there for him this summer. He had to settle on a 3-year deal for less money than he expected. And that's a player, at least in stature, when you're talking about undersized point guards and how they age, similar to IT, but you didn't have the health concerns and he has a longer track record of being a productive player.
And he's bigger. Like, he's just flat out bigger, you know.
Yeah. Well, not by much. I mean, he's
like 6 inches taller.
Well, no. Lowry's 5'11", man. Like, he's not that
so
big.
So 5 inches taller.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
the other thing, too, so a lot of the conversation after the LeBron trade, and this is something that I really wanted to pick your guys' brains about, was that the Cavs kind of essentially paid for the Uber for the date that their girl is going to go on with another guy, right? By freeing up cap space, they were going to help the Lakers sign their guy. That was much of the coverage right after it. But the aspect of the deal that I don't think was necessarily spoken enough about, and I don't think it's just this deal in a vacuum either. It's the George Hill trade. It's the Rodney Hood trade. And then it's also Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. The Cavs are a significantly better team now than they were before the trade deadline. And I'm kind of wondering if the Lakers maybe make that deal. I think they do because of the first round pick. But I kind of wonder if the Lakers make that deal again if they know that that the Cavs are also going to get George Hill and they're also going to get Rodney Hood and be this much better than they were before.
Sorry to cut you off, Carter,
yeah,
but
ahead,
I think it is a deal that they make again and again because the whole pitch to LeBron was always going to be, okay, we can clear up the space, we can burn down the existing roster, and we can sign other free agents to play with you. And with DeMarcus Cousins getting hurt and with Paul George seeming happier in OKC, it was always going to be a tough pitch for them. Like, they were going to be able to create that cap space no matter what. If it wasn't with this deal, they're going to find a way to do it in the summer. And I think that was part of the Cavs mentality, that was, it's okay, if LeBron's going to leave, he's going to leave. We're just making a deal to make us better now. We didn't sell low on the Nets pick. We got a better, younger roster now. And we have the possibility, either through the draft or by trading that Nets pick, to add more talent to this roster. So I still think it was a good move for the Lakers. You add the draft pick, you clear that cap space. They're going to be able to make free agent pitches. But there just isn't enough free agents this summer to really put a super team together. And that's always been the motivation for LeBron. He wants to go to the best basketball situation. I don't think he's moved on from that position at this point in his career. And even with Paul George and LeBron, I just don't think you can put a supporting cast together that's going to be a serious contender to the Warriors in year one. And moving west, not having the possibility of making the finals there, I always felt like that was a tough sell.
Yeah, again, at best, it was a 50-50 proclamation for all the reasons that you're talking about. Now, the other thing, too, that kind of makes me think that the Lakers have a chance is because the market is going to be so squeezed this year that if they are able to now, this only happens if they get both LeBron and Paul George. Like, this, otherwise, LeBron isn't leaving Cleveland for a situation where he's the only max guy, right? So, and that's why I think the Lakers leaked that they are recalibrating their decision making right now. Is that, look, we don't think we'd be, maybe before they might have been able to convince LeBron to wait it out, or maybe they might have just been able to convince Paul George. But the only thing that I keep kind of coming back to is this market is going to be so squeezed that I think there's going to be a ton of value out there for the teams that actually do have cap space, and moving Clarkson's deal, and that combined with stretching Luol Deng, gives the Lakers options to at least try to put something respectable around LeBron beyond the young core and beyond just Paul George. And the other thing too is that, like, they could always, if it, their pitch to LeBron is always going to be, we will put, here's how much space we have, here are the assets that we have, you can, if you don't want to deal with LeVar Ball, we can move Lonzo out of here, and we can move Brandon Ingram out of here, and we can get you and Paul George a third max guy, basically, and we'll see what kind of team that might be able to piece together. But that is such, Like, there are so many ducks that have to fall. Yeah, there's so many ducks that have to fall in a line to be able to pull that off. That I honest to God, I really do think that the Lakers, as crazy as it sounds, are probably best off, look, trying to swing a deal with Paul George. You have to take a meeting with LeBron, but you try to really pull off a deal with Paul George. You use the rest of your cap space as intelligently as you possibly can, and try to squeeze as much value out of a down market as you possibly can. And you let this young core grow with a guy whose clock matches up a little bit better. LeBron's 34, man. He's not going to wait around for any, like, Lonzo Ball to develop a decent jumper. Why would he do that?
No, it would be a scorched earth approach if he gets there. And if it makes you feel better, you know, LeBron's probably going to be there on that 2019 market. I think he's always going to try to keep his foot on the Cavs' throat and have some sort of mechanism to trigger accountability. So I think if he does stay in Cleveland, he's going to have an opt-out after next year. That's just the way he plays things. So I don't think that saga is over. That narrative will keep going. And there's more options for the Lakers. I think it's just, as you said, the better direction is to continue developing these young guys. And if the direction they go is, okay, we're trading off our young guys, we're consolidating our talent, and we're trying to win now, you're going to be able to do that more effectively in another year after those guys have developed.
Yeah, and I definitely want, when LeBron retires and is all said and done, I really want him to write a separate, like, an entire chapter of his book about the different times he used the Lakers as leverage. It's going to be great. I need JP, I need Abrams to get in there and talk to all the different people around LeBron and just see how many different people laugh at the mere idea of LeBron ever being a Laker. Because I never really felt like LeBron is the kind of guy who would want to be just another great Laker.
And no. Yeah, there's like a degree of, like, I was so uncomfortable with the idea when it was looking at its darkest, because I was just thinking, like, they're not going to love him like that.
No,
it's just aren't.
No.
They're not going to love him like thing. Even Heat fans loved him. Like,
and it's, like, going to be him on the decline. Like, we're fully on board with paying LeBron and keeping him here, but we understand that this is going to diminish at some point.
It's going to end ugly here, but at least, like, if he does decide to stay in Cleveland, like, it'll at least be our guy. Like, he'll be a mercenary in LA, and, like, it's also a fan base that has spent most of their lives shitting on him because yeah. He's not Kobe.
Yeah.
So, plus, like, plus we do ugly,
not to like him.
We do ugly, funnier, and better than anybody else. So I
that's
think
a great point.
It also has that going for them.
Yeah. It's crazy how many, I could write an article about all the things that LeBron would bring to the Los Angeles if he actually came to legitimacy off the court, obviously the greatness on it. And I would still get five or six Laker fans, Kobe avatars, obviously, saying how big a mistake that would be for the Lakers to go in that direction. That somehow he doesn't have mama mentality, you guys. You need to have that in Los Angeles, apparently.
Well, I mean, that's not unique to the Lakers fan base. Like, there's always going to be a section of every fan base that's going to go against the flow. Like, think how many Warriors fans didn't want to dump Harrison Barnes so that they could sign Durant because of chemistry. Like, you're just always going to get those takes.
That's
and those
that's
takes
some
are
take.
Dumb.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It is interesting for the Cavs' perspective. Like, so they have kind of moved away from the idea of a third ball dominant star. In sending Thomas out, because even if Thomas wasn't good, he at least fit the archetype of the big three model, and they kind of are going back down to the two. But I think it all kind of comes down to that Nets pick and what they do with it, and then any internal growth. But it is kind of, there is a lot that needs to fall on LeBron's shoulders in this Cleveland team, but it is interesting to think that the Lakers, in dealing Clarkson and Nance, who have been very good for them thus far, might be securing their own fate at least another 1+1 for LeBron.
Yeah.
If he's because he seems to be having fun. We're only two games into the experiment. I'm sure it's going to get ugly at some point. and all the guys they picked up, I do think we're kind of ignoring the fact that all of those guys had warts and they all had things that people didn't like about them. They just happen to be fitting in really, really well right now. So I'm wondering if any of that's going to rear their head.
No. Everything's going to be seamless forever. That's the way things work, especially in Cleveland.
On an unrelated note. Go ahead.
Nikola Jokic always looks like he has a cold, or he's just getting over a cold. His nose is just always red. I'm watching Spurs Nuggets right now.
He'd be a great podcaster because we are all stuffed up at
always. Oh, sorry guys. Sorry for my voice.
Sorry. I'm getting over a cold.
He is. You know, when I call people mouth breathers, I always feel like I have to apologize to Jokic. It's like he doesn't count in those people, but he's definitely a mouth breather.
Oh man,
100%. It's interesting. Someone said like, "Oh, that guy needs a haircut." Or something, and I'm like, I don't know if he's particularly salvageable from an image standpoint.
No.
I think he might just need to be what he looks like.
Yeah, I think he could go with the Alfred Payton hairdo. I think that would work for him.
Like, I think people think that if he just gets the haircut Gordon Hayward got, that he'll look good.
No.
I don't think that's how that works.
No, you know, we really need a Photoshop of that. If any of our listeners want to hit us up with a Jokic with Gordon Hayward,
Shimbo will take care of it.
Oh yeah, he's gonna take care of that.
That's he also like because we're all watching the game. I'm guessing right now, and the way he moves, like it, he's better off having a goofy haircut, like looking like a doofus with the way he moves. If he tries to look all clean and then he doesn't move cleanly, it just wouldn't work.
That's like Jetty. He can never get like a normal haircut. It needs to be this mop on top of his head, this curly mop on top of his head.
Yep.
He also can't burn the Head and Shoulders endorsement.
Yeah, exactly. You need that Turkish Head and Shoulders money.
How much do you think they offered him when they offered him that? It couldn't have been more than like $50 a week, right?
Oh yeah, it's an embarrassingly small amount of money.
That is the Steph Curry contract of endorsements. Like Head and Shoulders is getting a great ROI.
I feel like instead of an actual endorsement deal with actual money, they told him, "All right, usually every sixth haircut is free, every fifth one is free with you."
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's
incentives. We'll throw you in a bottle of conditioner just cause.
Exactly. Yep. Oh man, I feel like we're remiss in not talking about the potential DM ability of J.R. Smith and Jordan Clarkson on the same team.
Oh yeah,
dude, we got two Kardashians on the team. That matters way more.
Yeah.
Man, the Cavs could really flip the Kardashian curse narrative on its head then.
Well. Yeah, I mean,
didn't Odom win his championship when he was already with Chloe?
Yeah, he won two championships married to Chloe, and Tristan was dating Chloe at the time that the Cavs won in 2016. So she technically has three rings, but
so basically, people are dicks. Is the long and short of it?
Yeah, not exactly new information there.
No,
but it is. I am interested to see how the Clarkson experiment works out long term, because while I think basketball Twitter really isn't a big fan of him, and I honestly, like, I didn't have a very high opinion of him coming in, and he's making me look like a moron. He is an interesting guy because he passes his former fan base was sad to see him go test.
Yeah,
I like to call that the Jarrett Jack test, because I remember when the Cavs signed him off of a career season and not a single Warriors fan was sad to see him go. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Well, it's for Laker fans, he was, when they had Clarkson, when they had just drafted Clarkson, remember, his rookie season coincided with Julius Randle's rookie season, and not the good rookie season. The rookie season that featured 14 minutes and then a broken leg. It was, and then we also had Byron Scott as the coach back then, and you guys know how great that goes over. And we also had Kobe, who was maybe the worst player in the league, not just from an efficiency standpoint, but because his usage was out off the charts. So at a time where the Lakers were making us hate one of the most highly regarded Lakers of all time. And we also were learning to hate a champion, a former Laker champion, who can barely show his face in L.A. anymore. Jordan Clarkson was like the only good part of that season. He came out of nowhere and was a first-team all-rookie. And, you know, the Laker fan base kind of just watched him grow from there. And I always felt like he was asked to do way too much out here in L.A. just because the teams were terrible that he played on. But now that all he has to do is go in and play 15, 17 minutes and score 9 points, he could do that in his sleep.
Yeah, it's really seamless how well he's gone from never playing with a superstar player and someone that puts that pressure on you to playing with LeBron. It's incredible.
He works his ass off too, so that's also a nice.
Are you just ignoring my Kobe shade, or like what's going on here?
I'll throw. He was not. Kobe wasn't a superstar by any like stretch.
No, but you're still dealing with the superstar mentality there. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah,
no, Justin was so offended just now.
I was so offended.
I used to like imagine that Kobe team. Like all the guys on the team were like in the back of the plane, like playing cards, shooting the shit, and then Kobe like. I always like to imagine like Kobe would saunter in and like try to give this like dispense this unasked for wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, just like, oh boy, so let me show you how it's done, and like
and then immediately okay, lose a ton of money but not pay up. Like that.
Yes. just this general like all right, man, cool. Yeah. Like Kobe had this like general like energy of like these kids love hanging out with a legend, and they just wanted to hang out by themselves.
It was also tough, and it remains tough. Like anytime any Laker does anything remotely good, the narrative from the beat immediately turns back to, "Were you inspired by Kobe?" And it's like, no. How would Julius?
It was like when they asked Kyrie if LeBron was like his father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would Julius Randle get any inspiration from Kobe? Their games look nothing alike. Like, yes, I was particularly inspired by Kobe as I ran through Zach Randolph for the third time this game. That was
if we go a 3-minute stretch on our podcast without fucking up, people ask us if we were inspired by Jade. So I can completely understand.
Oh, wow.
Where we're coming from.
Oh man! Now
luckily,
you just got
no
yourself fired.
That much,
and
we fuck up a lot.
Yeah, exactly. That situation is yet to occur, so that could be true. You never know. But this is probably Anthony. Is there anything you want to touch on before we wrap this up?
No, man. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you guys helping me put this thing or joining me on this crossover thing. This was a ton of fun.
Yeah, man, a lot of fun. So to our listeners that are listening and haven't checked out Locked On Lakers, make sure you're doing so. For the Locked On Lakers guests that are listening for the first time, I apologize. Hopefully we didn't ruin your day too much.
He's Justin.
Oh, God. Yeah, Anthony, I botched the close to our last podcast. It was just absolutely fantastic. But I'll try my best to not do that right now. Make sure you guys are leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook the books. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. So until next time, go Cavs. We'll be right back.